Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Helpdesk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic.
So, everyone, I welcome you all. Today, I want to do something very special because in the past, I purely talked about Jung and Jung's concepts. But the best way to learn something and to understand something is to have examples and to have some reference points, what Jung tries to get at. Otherwise, it can be incredibly dry, and it can be really, really dry when you read the books, even though he has a lot of examples. I wanted to do something today by analyzing a movie where I think there are a lot of examples in it that can help to understand some key concepts about Jung. So this is not saying that Barbie, the movie, is necessarily a Jungian movie that somebody set out to say, okay, I'm trying to put in as much concepts of Jung as possible into there, which would be interesting, but it would surprise me if this is how the movie got created. But I saw the movie. I really liked the movie. I thought it was really, really entertaining. And the more I thought about it, the more concepts of Jung I found that I can use as examples. So this is not to saying this is a Jungian movie and every Jungian has to see this movie, but rather there's a lot of concepts in there. The way how I want to structure is I want to tell a little bit first about the concepts. So everybody who saw the movie already can maybe start already to think, oh, okay, they might get where I'm trying to get it. And then I will make a summary of the movie just for those who have not seen it, maybe. And then I will go, okay, directly applying all the things from before on the movie. And there are some really, really cool things that took me some time to figure out. But I saw the movie twice, just this weekend again, and took a lot of notes. And yeah, so when we talk about Jung and his life's work, the main part where everything revolves around, right, is this idea that you have the conscious and the unconscious, and how those two interact with each other. So how do things come from the unconscious into consciousness? And the other way around, like how do things go into the unconscious and how does consciousness evolve? Because consciousness is basically us, how we are. For him and what he found in his research and studies is that consciousness is very often associated with spiritual, air, lofty, also abstract things. So let's say things high up in the sky, removed a little bit from everything. And the unconscious is very much earthly, down to earth. And this interaction of those and the symbolization you have in the birds as consciousness and conscious things and snakes or reptiles as things of the earth. And this is why you have very often have this image of a bird that catches a snake, for example, or wrestles with the snake. You see that very often, like the Hunger Games, there's a new movie coming out and they have it as a front poster. And they, of course, did not come up with it. It's this very old symbol and it's used again and again. And for Jung, it's such a thing that symbolizes how our psyche works, that there's this constant struggle and interaction between consciousness and unconscious. So the main thing is that the unconscious constantly interferes with consciousness. So we set out a plan, we want to do something, but something comes from the side and distracts us. So the idea of the Freudian slip, for example, comes from that. We want to say one thing, but we're saying another thing because our conscious brings us to do that. We slip, we trip, we think of something inappropriate. Just images come up when somebody tells something to us. This is the unconscious interfering with our plans and our consciousness. The consciousness, of course, does not like that. So, because the unconscious is messy. It's like the earth, right? It's very messy. It's all entangled. It's not very clear. It's not necessarily structured. It's nature. So the consciousness tries to repress and remove everything that does not neatly fit into consciousness, where everything is structured as orderly and clean and pushes us down. So everything does not that does not fit. For example, when we have an image of ourselves, how we see ourselves, everything that does not fit, we try to mute down and say, okay, this is not so important, that's not really me. It gets pushed into the unconscious. It's removed from the very clean place that we have into kind of the dark and shadowy place and dirty place where we think where it belongs. And the problem that Jung saw, especially today for the modern world where consciousness is very strong, because we have the institutions and we have school, work, all those things that are there to train our willpower and to expand our consciousness with capabilities, is that people with their minds kind of fly away. They might think that their consciousness, their mind is separated from the body. It's something else, two different things that kind of coexist. But in the end, it's all the same. It's one body. It's also part of one psyche. But for consciousness, it's way easier to just think in conscious terms and to ignore the rest. And this idea of we have two poles acting against each other, Jung uses very often. He calls that the opposites. And he says it's the psyche and psychic processes interacting has very often to do with opposites that are hard to combine and hard to bring together. And bringing them together is a difficult task and a lot of work. But he says, when consciousness pushes too far into one direction, it will provoke the unconscious to counteract, to bring back a balance, to remind the person that there's more to them, that they have a complete body and a complete psyche, to bring them into a higher state. Of course, this has to be a conscious decision to do so. It's counterbalancing act. The unconscious does all by itself, but consciousness also has to follow that and not ignore it, because then it gets worse and worse. So for these opposites, it's important because for Jung, that's really part of how we perceive the world. He says, we only have dark when there's light and the other way around. We only have high when there's low. When we say something, we also talk about the opposite. The one can't be without the other. One of the basic opposites that he sees besides consciousness and unconscious is that of logos and eros. Logos being the function that separates and eros being the function that binds together. So there are these forces that are constantly interacting, because this is what you also do in real life. You separate or you bring together, and this is constant. And you can't say, oh, I only separate and then everything is nice, because then everything is dead. Or only combine, then everything gets entangled and there's not really clear, like a completely dirty room. So it's both are necessary in a balance. And he sees that they're both in the psyche, but based on the gender of a person, it's rather a person feels more at home in logos or more at home at eros. So every person has the same, it's just in a different ratio what gets preferred. And he says for men, it's the logos aspect, separating aspect being preferred, where people feel at home, which makes eros the unconscious side, the kind of difficult side. And for women, it's the other way around. The eros, the combining function, the relation function is in the main view, while logos is more in the dark. This again means this is like a starting position. It does not mean that it has to be like that, but it is how, let's say, the game starts. And bringing this all together and developing a whole person and a whole psyche means to traverse one's own psychology, to go into the dark parts, because only there can be growth. What you know is light lit up, everything is structured, everything is ordered, that there's no room to grow as a person. And one has a whole psyche and it has to be lived. This is what the unconscious pushes. And there's one factor on the unconscious that does that, and this is the self. And the self can be understood something like a future you. And it puts in all these different tasks and all the different situations to one that forces one to evolve. At least one should decide to also evolve. One can oppose, but then of course it becomes more and more difficult with the unconscious because it will interact more and more and interfere. When we start out an individuation process, this is called this journey through the psyche, people have a low level of consciousness. And this low level of consciousness, he references to earlier societies. Like that we have this very strong consciousness is relatively new for him, just a couple of thousands of years since writing starts. He says that's the beginning of consciousness. Everything before, people are in an unconscious state. And he says he could see it in some like pre-scientific societies, primitive societies, he called them, hunter-gatherers. And he noted there that these tribes were very much afraid of everything that could interfere with consciousness, because they only had a very little unstable consciousness, so they had to kind of get rid of everything that might interfere. So everything that was strange, unusual, but even when people had bad luck, they tried to ostracize them. And he noted that the idea of an individual did not really exist. People existed more in a group. So they were one with other people or a group or even things or places. The psychology was not separated from the surroundings. The idea of an I and of being an individual was not there. So this is a path of individuation, become an individual, something that is different from the rest, not completely separated, but different and aware of that difference. The constant journey and the constant problem of individuation is that what people already know and already can do, Jung calls as superior function. It's like you have two hands, but you like one really, really a lot more than the other. And when there's something new to do, you first try it with your strong hand. As people might think, what happens in individuation is exactly that the self pushes people to use the other hand also to develop it, because you have two hands and you should be able to use both in a kind of sophistication. This means people try with all the tools, all the knowledge that they have, and they fail because they have to utilize the things they do not yet have. And this interaction can feel like a divine interaction. And it's what he calls a transcendent function. By you growing outside of yourself, you're transversing your own being in these situations, everything that you are to become something more. And this is very, very interesting thoughts. And he says, there are people that have different states of conscious ability and conscious sense of minds. He says, just because we live in modernity does not mean everybody is modern, that everybody has the newest version of consciousness. He says, in society, you have different spheres. And even back then, he said, okay, when I want to meet primitive people, I ride the tram in Zurich. Because you have people, in his view, that are still living in the Middle Ages or in ancient Greek in those times, just a different way of looking at the world, seeing the world, and a different way how much is integrated of all the functions and capabilities there are. He also says there's like these people who live in the year 3000 already. And he says this can make people pretty lonely because there is no body to reference towards and to interact with on such a level. And the last point I want to bring from Jung's ideas, concepts for exploring this movie, is the idea is when things come from the unconscious, consciousness does not know what to do with them. This is why consciousness is afraid of the unconscious contents, because they are scary, they are hard to untangle, they're mixed up, they look dark and muddy, and he calls that archaic. So like really, really simple. It's like a wild dog. It's volatile. It can be aggressive. It's scary. You don't know how to interact. But when you spend time with these contents, the consciousness kind of unpacks them and untangles them from other contents. And to stay with the example of the dog can become domesticated. And then you can interact with it great. You can rely on it. You can trust it. You can play with it and you can build a relationship with it. And he says that with all the things that are in the unconscious, that they are able to build a relationship with it, even though it looks very, very hard in the beginning. This progression from archaic to differentiated and sophisticated, this is also part of individuation. But like every part that's in the unconscious goes through this. And it's again and again, this pain and very hard development. So I would move to a summary of the movie now, and I wrote it down just to make it very quick, not bore anyone who already saw it, but I want to point out some key points that are important. for the discussion. Barbie is basically having a perfect life in Barbie Land, which is a fantasy playland for little girls. Everything is fine until a certain day she starts having intrusive thoughts about death, and suddenly nothing works for her anymore. She's told that there's something wrong in the real world with the person that is playing with her, and she has now to go there and fix it. And the reason why she does it is because she wants to have everything stay the same in Barbie Land. And along on her journey comes Ken, who is completely engrossed by Barbie and wants to be with her all the time. And it's up to the point of obsession. They come to the real world, but Barbie learns that everything is kind of in a mirror world. Everything is mixed and she doesn't know how to behave. She gets into problems with the police, and Ken explores the world and gets completely wrong ideas what it means to be a man. The company that makes Barbie, Mattel, gets wind of it, and they fear a marketing and PR disaster, so they want to look her up and try to catch her. Barbie finds out the reason for her thoughts. The reasons are that not a little girl is playing with her, but rather a grown woman. And a grown woman has a way more complex psychology than a little girl. And this is why she's now having these complex thoughts. They're getting back to Barbie Land, and Ken is already there, and he overturned society and turned it in kind of a cute bro culture, and he brainwashed all the Barbies. Barbie with the woman from the real world, Gloria, and all the cast out Barbies that are in Barbie Land hatch a plan to make the Kents fight against each other, so to bring back some stability again. They succeed. The dude bro culture gets dismantled, but Barbie realizes that she does not belong in Barbie Land anymore. So she decides to become a real woman and go into the real world. I want to make a disclaimer. As I mentioned in the beginning, I don't see Barbie as a Jungian movie. It's just a great way to show some Jungian concepts. But what is my bridge to bring in Jung? And there's a very strong reason for that. The layer that connects all human beings, it's a collective unconscious. Like, we have our individual life, our individual journey. But if we go low enough in the psyche, we have enough that connects us with other people, that we have the same experiences they do, even in dreams or in visions or just in life. And when we have art, works of art, when they are able to talk to these deep layers, they are able to talk to a huge group of people, up potentially to everybody on planet Earth, today and in the future. So this is now the most successful movie of the year, and there's only a handful of movies that earned more money than Barbie. So it's popular, so we have to assume it's archetypal. And this is why I want to talk about it, because the archetypal things show us how our psyche works deep inside. And when we experience something like that, a great piece of art, just as an example, talks to us on a very deep level, and we're engrossed by it, and we want to spend time with it, and we want to understand it. And if it happens to enough people and they're willing to spend money, then movie studios or song makers or whoever can make a lot of money. My personal view on the movie is it's rather a satire, in the sense that there's a huge, huge disconnect between what is said and what is shown. So very often the things that are said don't make sense in the context where they are presented. And that makes it a difficult movie to get a hard grasp on it. But I will get to that later in the end. So to analyze that and to bring this now together, the concepts of Jung and Barbie the movie, with the summary, we have to look at Barbie Land, which is this fantasy land where the first act of the movie is taking place. And the most important thing to understand there is that it's not the real world. It's not even comparable. It's sterile in that sense. There is no flowing water. There are no living animals. There is no birth. There's no death. There's no aging. There are not even relationships. The cars don't have motors. And very often they don't even need to drive the cars. They have nothing that really breaks. Nobody gets sick. Nobody gets ill. It's every day, the best day, every day. And nobody is really concerned about it. I don't know if you've seen the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, but he's also reliving the same day every day. And it takes him just a couple of turns that he tries to kill himself all the time. Because real human beings, they can't do it. They can't stand it to have this constant repetition. It doesn't matter how great it is. When it's always great, it gets unbearable anyways. It's the same as trying to lie down on the most comfortable couch that you can think of, or most comfortable bed. Even after a couple of minutes trying to not to move, it becomes agony, because human beings have to move. They have to change. They have to, something has to happen. And this has to be kept in mind, because all the things that are happening there and people are doing, it's all play. It's make pretend. It's a charade. They drive around with trash cans. And I'm pretty sure there's nothing in it, because nobody is eating anything. The container with milk or what it is, it's empty, right? There's no waste. Nobody goes to the toilet. There is really nothing. In that sense, it's incredibly, incredibly sterile. But it's not only that Barbie Land is strange and in a kind of heightened reality. The same is for the real world. The real world also is more like a parody. When they go there and they interact with the people there, they also act very strange. It's like, it's just the opposite of Barbie Land. The opposite of something very strange is, again, something strange. They go to the construction site and immediately it's just one sexist sentence after the other. And no real person will talk like this, especially not in this situation. It's a comedy. It's heightened reality. It's more similar to like a Wes Anderson movie, where it's also childlike. The Barbie Land is childlike because it's a fantasy of small children. But as we learned during the movie, it's not only the fantasy of small children, but rather of guys running a company, thinking of a place of Barbie Land. Like the whole board, they're all men, and they think about, okay, what this female society could look like. And if you checked out the quote for this event, I reference this, where Jung says about the problem with men looking at women and trying to understand the psychology is that they project in their own inferior femininity into that, and they see that. And that makes it then complicated to find the right interaction. So this is why nobody thinks about Ken, because the little girls, they're not grown enough to think about boys. And the guys, of course, do not care about the boys in that land. So this is why the Kens don't have any homes. And this childlike quality shows itself in the people, as they have no filter, right? They just say what that comes to mind. They're very naive. So in Barbie Land, it's okay. But in the real world, they would get into trouble because they're thinking, okay, you don't have to pay. I can tell people whatever. It's outrageous. And that's what's funny. It's a kind of fish out of water story. The things they do are outrageous, and that makes it a comedy. Also, in Barbie Land, they know things, but it's only book knowledge. It's definitions. And that's enough, because it's make pretend. Like, people pretend to be a doctor. People pretend to be president. But there's no need for a president or a doctor. So it's enough when you wear the right clothes and talk in that way. And this is one of the funniest situations, when Barbie is accused of being a fascist. And she just says, people think I'm controlling the railways and the flow of commerce. Because that's one definition of fascism. But this is, of course, not meant. And this is completely beside the point. But this is this idea of, you have this completely disembodied knowledge that is separated from a strong underpinning. It's not connected to anything. She maybe knows the textbook definition of fascism, but certainly she does not know about Nazi Germany or fascist Italy and the Holocaust and all those things. This is an important point to understand, that the Barbies and Kens, they're not really men and women. In their minds, they have these things, but bodily and everything else, there's no need for such a separation between men and women, because there's not really a problem to solve. This is not nature. It's completely unnatural. So this is the state of Barbie Land in the beginning of the movie. And this is a place where Barbie grows up and exists. The way how her story starts is by having these thoughts of death. And this is the interesting thing when you want to look at it from a Jungian perspective, because when we say she has a female psychology, of course, the logos part would be inferior in her. And this would be the things that come through the unconscious. And the logos is associated with words. This means she having thoughts of death. This is her logos coming up and presenting as something from the unconscious, which is completely strange and foreign to her. But she's so naive that she does not realize it and blurts it out in a party. And everybody around her is mortified by what she said. And it's only then that she realizes there's something wrong. And this is when things start to fail for her. Like all the things we've seen before, one of those perfect days, suddenly she wakes up, has bad breath. The water has the wrong temperature. The milk is old. The toast is burnt. All the things she never had to think about, suddenly they become problematic. Suddenly she can't live her normal life anymore. She falls from the roof. And this is what makes her concerned. One of the coolest things that I realized is this, that her feet are flat. The feet are always like this. They're always suspended in the air because of the high heels. But once the unconscious comes up and like the bodily comes, she gets into contact with the full earth with her feet, and she does not know how to deal with it and how to walk. And this reminded me of something that Jung said about patients he had, British soldiers who were stationed in India. And he said, if you go to a completely different culture from yours, it's kind of your psyche trying to protect itself and becoming more stereotypical in the way you are and where you're from. And this is an effort to not touch ground on the foreign soil and not let it infect the person. And he noted that very often then people, for example, went to Africa and India and were there for a long time, that kind of the psychology of the soil creeps up in their unconscious and starts to influence them, and people are trying to shut themselves off. So this image that he had of the feet of the soldiers or other people kind of hovering above the ground, this is now what's happening to Barbie. She's full feet on the ground. And it's her body trying to bring her more down to the earthly, out of the abstract, the sterile and dead, into the nourishing and also renovating earth. What does Barbie do? And this is something that happens very, very often in movies. Normally, also in fairy tales, people go to a witch. They don't know what to do, so they don't turn to normal society. They go to the outcast of society and ask, okay, what's wrong? In this case, it's Weird Barbie. And Weird Barbie has special knowledge because she got through the ringer of the real world. They're like, the real world interacted too much with her, and now she's damaged goods. And this is why the society puts her as an outcast outside of the city. And even her house looks weird. And she has superior knowledge above the other Barbies, because the other Barbies, they just shun her. They ignore her and talk behind her back, and she has to live alone in her house. But if things are serious and people can't function normally anymore, they go to the witch and ask her for advice. And she tells Barbie that somebody is playing with her and something's wrong with that person. And that's why she's having problems. And this is so cool because Barbie does not know that somebody is playing with her. And it's this idea of psychoanalysis. This is one of the staples of psychoanalysis, that you are not the lord in your own house. There are also other guests, and they push and pull you and influence you. So it's her unconscious acting up, and she realizes, oh, okay, I have to now go into the place and through the dark of the unconscious to find out what is wrong. So it's, of course, an outward journey as she goes to another place, but it's really an inward journey to find out more. All she has is the thought of death, and her life is not working anymore, and wants to find out why. Well, basically, she does not want to find out why. The reason why she's doing is because she does not want things to change. She only wants to interact to the point where it's gone and she can ignore it and live the life again and have the best day of her life again and again. Coming back to a prior primal ideal state, I mentioned already that she's incredibly childlike and naive with the people around it. And she thinks that this girl, Sasha, is playing with her because she has the visions. She's turning inward. She does a little bit of active imagination, trying to find out what she sees in her own unconscious. And she sees that little girl and thinks, okay, this is the person I need to talk to. But of course, she does it in the completely wrong way because she does not know how to interact with real people. And this puts her completely into disarray, and she cries. But something very interesting happens is when she's in the real world and when she's sitting alone on that bench and trying to think, using her, let's say, inferior functions of the unconscious to come up with a solution. She sees all the different people and she sees an old lady. And the first time that she's seen an old lady, like she sees death and decay and an end coming. Because in Barbie Land, everything is plastic. Everything is fantastic. Nothing really ends. It's the best day every day. But there she sees people crying, people laughing, things living, changing. And this has an influence on her. And she cries. And she is cries for the first time of her life. She explores new, different parts of herself and her experience. And she likes it. And this is a very, very important point, especially for the end of the movie. How she tries to interact with Sasha is in this very relation-based mode of being. She's friendly with everyone, right? And so she goes there as she's her best friend. But it doesn't work. It's her superior function failing. The ways and the tools that she's have are failing. And she does not know how to deal with it. So she runs away crying and being upset. If we fast forward, I'm just talking about her own psychological journey. When they're back in Barbie Land, and she realizes that Barbie Land now has changed in something completely different, completely foreign. And she even lost her house. She doubles down on this idea of, okay, I just want things to end. I don't want any of this. I'm just going to lie down and play dead. I will become unconscious. I don't want to be awake for this. I just want to wait till it's over. And I don't want to be any part of it. And there's this fairy tale of the girl who spins, and she pricks her finger on the spindle and she falls asleep and she has to be kissed awake by a prince. She's in a castle and around it, there's all those thorny plants. I forgot the name, but you know what I mean. One interpretation was that her parents, for her 16th birthday, did not invite, her earlier birthday, did not invite evil or something like that. So she did not have experience of the whole psychology that is there. So she becomes unconscious. And sleeping and death, symbology-wise, are with this unconscious state. So she tries to shut herself out of everything. It's her consciousness blocking off everything and not be any part of it. But what happens later, when Gloria gives her speech about how difficult it is to be a woman in the real world, it's then a reminder of the complexity of the world. Barbie Land is very simple. It's incredibly simple. Basically, you don't have to do anything, right? But in the real world, you have to do everything. And when Barbie sat at the bench and saw the real world and saw the interactions and saw what variety is there, and she liked it. When Gloria explained how it's difficult it is to be a woman and Barbie gets hope, this is her realizing what her journey is and where she has to go. And this comes out then in the end, where she talks basically to herself, the inventor of Barbie, but also the woman who gave birth to the real Barbara. So like the bodily Barbara and the spiritual Barbara. And she's put into this decision what she wants to do. And this is the first time that she actually wants something. Before, she only does not want something. But then she wants something. And this thing is to become a real woman and get into the real world. So the whole movie is like Pinocchio. But Pinocchio finds only out at the very end of the movie and decides to become a real boy. That makes Barbie a little bit of a tough protagonist because she's not pushing so much the story forward. It's in the second half taken over by Gloria and Ken. But her experience is from thoughts of death to, oh no, this is only death and decay, I have to stop it, to, oh my God, nothing I do does not work, and realizing, okay, there's more, there's promise, there's not only death and decay, there's also life in there. And basically trying back to getting to an earlier state of consciousness, which is not possible. It's like leaving the Garden of Eden in the Bible. People were cast out and there's no way back. And this is the stages of consciousness. You can't go to a lower way. This is what Jung spent his life on, by saying, okay, we have this ancient wisdom of the psyche and mythology and fairy tales and religion and all these things. but it's not available for us anymore. We're too removed. We now have other conscious needs, so it's not there for us. And we have to explore it new. And his idea was that psychology was a way to explore these things again and to bring them back into culture. But you cannot say today, okay, I'm going to go back into Christianity and live it the same way how it was lived 500,000 or 2,000 years ago. It's just not possible for us. We have to find a different way and move forward. It doesn't mean that it's useless, but it has to be rediscovered in a new way. The old ways, the symbols, the dogmas, and so on, they don't work anymore. So we need new ones. And this is the journey that Barbie is taking. And I can't believe that I'm talking like this about a movie about a doll that's being sold to little girls. Parallel to that, you have Ken's journey. And this is also very interesting because you might remember what I said about you have Barbie and her thing coming from the unconscious are the intrusive thoughts. For Ken, it's intrusive feelings. It's the Eros function. It's the relation function. But the same way how Barbie can't deal with the thoughts of death, he can't deal with feeling because he gets an obsession with Barbie. And he is completely focused on her and he only wants to be with her. And she does not understand it. He also does not understand it, but he just wants to be with her all the time. So they're in a similar situation. There's something inside them that starts bugging them and they have to find a way how to deal with it. The problem for Ken is at least Barbie found a real person in the real world, like an ambassador who can explain how the real world works and what it means to be a real woman. Ken does not have that. And this is very interesting because he's in the logos sphere. He's in the word sphere, right? He's in the separation sphere. So he gets into the real world. And what does he do? He walks around alone. He watches people. He watches people in a gym. He sees some advertisement. And the next thing he says, like, I want to learn more. I'm going to a library and get books and read about it. I'm going to read about horses and trucks and all those things. And he's not well enough versed in the real world to understand what all these things means. It's all really just words on paper. It's only abstract again. And there's not one male person that he really builds a connection with who can explain to him what is necessary. He would have needed a father to explain what it means to be a man, but rather he is a naive child, goes out into the real world, sees all the flashy things, the big cars, the fur, the loudness, and just wants to copy it like an adolescent boy who does not understand what it really means to be a man. It's because it's all show, it's all charade. He then thinks this is really the thing that he's projecting his insecurities into the outside world, sees those and thinks this is real. And he thinks, oh, all you need to be is to be a man and suddenly you get everything. But he finds out, oh no, you need to all those stuff. You need to change. You need to get education, certification, training, right? He says, oh no, that's way too hard. I don't want to change. That's so difficult. Okay, I will set up a new society somewhere else where I have all these great things that I just saw and that I think that are amazing, but I don't have to do really the effort. So rather than confronting his own soul and own being and questioning that, he tries to change the world. In a Jungian sense and Jungian concept, that's possession and inflation. So there's certain forces in his unconscious that are taking over and bringing him to force himself onto other people with his views and his ideas. And he's shaping the world. There's this quote of Dostoevsky that fits perfectly, that people rather change the world than confront their own soul. A simple reason why he is amazed by horses. He's never seen real animals. There are no real animals in Barbie land. So the first and only animal that he sees is a horse. And you have to get into the mind of somebody who has never seen any animal and then suddenly sees one. Of course, they're amazed. Of course, they're completely transfixed about it. And that's why he thinks, okay, they're sharing the same space as human beings. So they have to be as important and as involved as everybody else. But this is, again, his complete misunderstanding about everything of the real world and just bringing selective, very shiny things. He's engrossed by the aesthetics, but he does not get the meaning and the underlying things. Like, you can't work out how society works by watching people training in a gym. But then you have, again, this heightened reality where they call themselves, you're the man, and man. So that's a funny aspect of the movie. He has also a little arc in the movie in the sense that he can bring his relationship function under control and integrated by burying the hatch with a rivalry with the other Ken. So in the beginning, it's really this rivalry between these two and up to the armed conflict in the end, but they can find commonality and then be friends. So this is his journey coming to terms with that. But yeah, he's a little boy who does not understand anything. How Barbie Land evolves over the movie is also very, very interesting. I mentioned in the beginning how in Barbie Land, everything is very spiritual, abstract, a little bit like consciousness. In that sense, it's rootless. And what Jung mentions very often, when people lack this connection to nature and the body and the unconscious, they can be pushed around like a balloon filled with air. There's nothing keeping them really down. They can move here, they can move there. There's nothing anchoring them. The example that they bring, the movie, is that of the smallpox that killed countless people in the Americas. Like the Europeans had very strong immune system by living so close to certain animals for a very long time in cities. And they brought all those infectious diseases to North America, where there were no immunity and no health supporting systems that could help them survive it. And it was a crazy time. Within 100 years, 90% of the people died. And with more time, even more. And the idea is here the same. You have all these infectious things from the real world, the same as this infected Barbie, and also likely Ken, suddenly coming to everyone. And this is why he can so easily convince the Barbies to go along with this completely new opposite culture, because there's nothing grounding them. They're getting programmed. Before they have been unconscious, and afterwards they've been unconscious, but they've been directed into a new direction. And the thing you have to think about when they deprogram the Barbies, all they do is just reprogram them to something else. They're still in this very unconscious state, in the sense that they don't have really contact with the real world. They're just being told things again. So it's easy to change their minds because there's nothing behind it. What's interesting also is you have this separation in the society between like the regular Barbies and the regular Kens, and then you have the outcasts. You have like Alan, and there's only one Alan. And he's also on a higher sphere of consciousness as he realizes that something is strange. And this is why he also wants to escape, because it says, this is not where I belong. I should be somewhere else. And he does not have the chance. He has to stay. But who helps in the end to reprogram all the Barbies? It's all the outcasts. It's the weird Barbie. It's the ones with weird functions that got off the market. Like the pregnant Barbie, they just put her in a fence so that she can't go anywhere and can't do anything. So they separate all the strange things. But the strange things are in the end what saves Barbie Land, because it's the unusual things, the unfitting things, muddy, dirty, shadowy things that you just want to repress. This is a savior. This is stepping through this shadow and coming into a higher sphere and becoming more integrated. The society tries that, but in the end, the society is saved by that. So that's a very interesting thought. And how the Barbie Land also changes through the journey of Barbie and Ken is by introducing more complex ways of being, like lying, pretending, making things up. All those things shows already a more sophisticated cognitive functioning. Like very small children, they can't do it. But when children grow, they also start to learn lying and pretending and all those things. And they also do it. So there's a general evolvement of that. But in the end, they say, okay, maybe things don't have to come back to the same stage as before. But in the end, there's the same. They're still completely the same. The Kens still don't have anything to do in the society. And they also very gladly go into unconscious state again. And this is one aspect where I say, okay, there's a disconnect between what is said and the context where it's said. Like the president says, yeah, oh, we don't have to go back to the way it was before. But then everything she does cements that, and people are just unconscious again. The thing is, in Barbie Land, all the problems are societal because there's no nature. So they can be changed all the time without problem, without repercussion, because there's nothing anchored. There's nothing behind it. There's not anything you have to take into consideration. People don't really need each other because there are no problems. It's all pretend. And what people you have in society, their doctors, president, Nobel Prize laureates, and so on, they have a lot of clothes. There's no sweatshop Barbie. There's no plumber Barbie. It's like everything just exists. They don't have to make anything. But of course, if you want to have something from nature, you have to really work for that. To bring that all to a conclusion, to see Barbie's journey, it's really this Pinocchio journey of Pinocchio realizing he does not want to be a doll anymore, but taking the whole movie to learn that, having this pretty intricate journey of individuation that I found really interesting, of this interaction between consciousness and unconscious, and all these references between the spiritual and the earthly. All in all, I have to say, it's amazing that the mother company, Mattel, went along with it. They even have a part in the movie. I really wonder why they did it, because it's not really, it's good Barbie advertisement, but it could have gone in a completely wrong direction. This movie was in development hell. This is the term for projects that don't make it, that are constantly being rewritten, different people are on it. So that they decided on this version, I think they at a certain point gave up and said, like, okay, do whatever you want. It's going to be okay. But the result is, it's pretty good. And it's a very, very unusual movie. And when it's about Barbie, it's so benign. It's such a simple thing. It's a doll. But then you make this very complex story about it, about death and decay and aging. What I see as a reaction with people, how they react to the movie, that they like it or completely dislike it, often without knowing anything about it. When we talk about it in the Jungian sense, he says people in their personal unconscious have this unconscious forces called the complex. For him, consciousness consists of associations. And when you have the right associations, you can activate this complex. And then the center of a complex is always an emotion. And he calls it really like a mouse trap. With the right words, people get triggered to act in a certain way. It's like a little program that takes over and they just are rattling on about a certain topic. And there are a lot of things mentioned in the movie, feminism and patriarchy and so on. Those are loaded terms by now. So people hear this and they immediately have an opinion. They immediately think of something. And this clouds the judgment and brings them into think in certain ways and to evaluate in certain ways. And that's what I meant by it's for different people hard to pin down the movie, because depending on why you look, you see very different things, kind of words you react to. But all in all, I have to say it's a fun movie, and I'm glad that they did it. And to bring it all around to the very beginning of the event, talking about opposites, there's this concept in Hollywood called counter-programming. There are countless movies being made every year, and they come out almost every day, new movies, constantly. So you have to really think about, okay, when do I show a movie? And when you want to have a big movie, you say like, okay, I do it before Christmas or before holidays, because then people have time with their family to go to the cinema and you make a lot of money. But you also have to take into account what other movies are being shown. And something very old, a very old trick in Hollywood, is to do counter-programming. You make two movies which are very different, almost polar opposites, and show them at the same time so you can grab a bigger market, because people saying, oh, and I don't want to see a romantic movie on Valentine's Day, or I don't want to see a horror movie on Halloween. So there's always another option. And you can go there even out of protest. In this case, it's very interesting that it was complementary. As you have Oppenheimer and Barbie at the same time, and people were completely into it, and they saw both movies. Like Oppenheimer is a three-hour, very strangely structured biopic about the inventor of the atom bomb. It's now the third most successful movie of the year. I guess it really got a huge advantage through this marketing with Barbie. But it's no coincidence that people like this Barbenheimer. It's the opposites again, and people like this to have the contrast, because the opposites and the contrast, this is how we see and we experience. And that's what we need, this constant change from one pole to the next. So, and this was my very long talk, where I want to thank you for the attention. And I hope that you maybe found some alternative views on your experience that you had. And this would be what I would be very interested in your experience and your thoughts. This would conclude the first part.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. During an event, a discussion part follows after the presentation where all attendees discuss the just presented topic or other Jungian concepts. If you also want to join, find the group on meetup.com. The name of the group is CG Jung Helpdesk. Also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. See you next time.